The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host John DePietro.
All right, here we go on this Monday. It is Political Monday, folks. Good afternoon. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. This portion of our program brought to you by K's. Stop in lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Always a friendly face and a delicious meal waiting for you at K's. Well, folks, it is Political Monday. Let's bring him on. He's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. We want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Justin. Justin, I want to start off. You wrote a piece I think it was over the weekend, but or late last week. But and I'll give them credit. Go Local Prov. They requested public documents of emails, and as much as in the past, many times when Governor Raimondo has received national publicity, it's through the efforts of having a New York PR firm. But what you really saw was there was a big expose about her in the New York Times by reporter Frank Bruni, and you started to really get some insight as to how long this thing took and the amount of information unsolicited they were sending. As much as the Raimondo people almost try to make it seem like, yeah, you know, this guy from the New York Times just called and, you know, wanted to talk to her. This is a long, calculated effort they push in order to get interest and then get him. And what people need to realize is there's no benefit to the state in this whole thing. She uses her staff to get herself national publicity. It takes up state time, hours. This is not the campaign. These are people that are supposed to be working their communication for her, but this is not real communication. This is they're doing PR work to get her national play in order to illustrate and give her more of a national profile.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What's striking about the Go Local Prov review of these emails is you're talking about 3 months of communication to build up to this article. So it's not at all, you know, the guy had a spare time in his calendar and had to fill it with something, and he found a governor in Rhode Island to write about for the New York Times. And it, as you say, it has no benefit to Rhode Island. It seems to be mainly setting up Gina Raimondo for some kind of role in a future national campaign of some sort, whether you're talking, you know, in a cabinet or vice president or what have you. But what I found really, really striking is the question that never seems to be asked is, where is the line? So at this point, Governor Raimondo has multiple PR firms essentially working for her. There's the one when she's acting as governor, her PR staff, which everybody from the Providence Journal to you and me has been talking about as this massive PR firm with all kinds of people in every department, mainly crafting the public narrative. So she's got that on a taxpayer roll dime. When the election season comes along and her PR people need to be a little bit more political, she shifts some of them into a campaign. And we actually just saw her former PR head with the state government, Mike Rea, is now a partner with Nail Communications, which incidentally has received hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer dollars from the Raimondo administration in the past couple of years. So where are these lines? Frank Bruni's column was explicitly political. It was explicitly partisan. And yet you and me and every taxpayer in Rhode Island is helping to fund the PR work that makes that happen. And that's really, at some point, you're just way beyond the line of what ought to be done. To me, the image that made this, literally the image that made this crystal clear, in some of the emails, there's discussion of what photographs to use with the article in the New York Times, and the New York Times photo desk said, picked it. And what they picked is essentially Raimondo in her office, and the mainstream media loves this move. Lights reflected in a picture behind her create what looks like a halo behind her head.
That's right.
This is what they're setting her up for a national campaign. It is purely political, and taxpayers shouldn't have anything to do with this. And we've completely lost that kind of perspective, I think.
You know, and not only that, but would they be spending this kind of time if they in any way perceived that it was maybe going to be a negative article? It's all because it's the understanding that this is going to be a very flattering profile. That picture, you're exactly right. That took time. That was a photo shoot. But the amount of time they engage, there's a huge difference between, let's just say at the time, Governor Cacciari was the governor, and he didn't have the type of national aspirations that Governor Raimondo did. So the Boston Globe, they contact Governor Raimondo's people, say, we're doing a story, want to send someone down. Okay, he blocks off some time. They agree, maybe whatever. The reporter's going to tag along on his schedule, get some time alone with the governor. He's going to bring a photographer. They want to take some pictures. Boom. This is 3 months of Team Raimondo working him. And it illustrates exactly what you and I have talked about and thought. It's incredibly crafted, and there is a means to this, but it is blurring the lines. To me, it is completely taking advantage of her staff that's supposed to be there, quote, communication. It's not about communication. They're there acting in a PR fashion. They just happen to be on the payroll for the state. And Chafee didn't have that type of operation because Chafee, you know, when he was governor, never thought about president, certainly never talked about it if he had. But it's supposed to be, well, it was supposed to be a role of, you know, at some point someone was first hired going way back. I don't know when that was, but as the first communication person. And you could see, you know, people, reporters have questions. They want statements. The governor's too busy, or someone to illustrate and get out that aspect of the communication. It has now evolved where she has one of the top journal reporters. And I also saw even one of her former colleagues of Jennifer Bogdan, Kathy Gregg, was going after her saying, you know, in the past, you would have been fighting to get this information. And now, not only do they act as barriers, but they basically, a lot of the communication people feel that they don't really, you know, report, or there's no need to respond to the press, which was initially why they were brought into the role in the first place.
Right. Well, the rationale of a communications office is to make sure the public is getting full information, clear information from elected officials. That's what they're there to do. And that has certainly evolved to the point, and it's all under Raimondo, as far as I can see, where not only are they restricting information. I remember almost immediately, it seemed, when Raimondo took office, all of the people within the bureaucracy, whichever department, say revenue analysis or whatever, that would used to respond to you, you know, quickly with email to answer a question, suddenly said, no, you have to go through the PR people. So they restricted information, and now it's clear their mission, their goal, their job is to promote the governor, not to ensure that the people have clear information. In fact, another tidbit that was nice out of those emails, Frank Bruni's office. So Raimondo, in her budget, wants to charge big companies 10% of people's salary if they're on Medicaid, employees' salaries if they're on Medicaid. So that would be Raimondo wants to call it, I think, an assessment, which sounds a lot better. It's an assessment. You know, we're just, and even the New York Times said, it's a tax. Come on. So you have the PR firm for the state fighting back against clarity to the New York Times. And that's about as emblematic of how this has become. And it's wrong.
It is wrong. And also, before we move on to our next topic, the whole situation with Mike Rea, he was her communication person. Then he moved over to the campaign. He was nonstop on Twitter going after Mayor Fung, nonstop with the campaign. And now he leaves there, but then gets a job at this communication firm, Nail Communications, of which has been getting big state contracts. Then you just wonder, is that really now going to be a way that he can even extend his efforts even more on behalf of the governor, but now it's under the guise where they're going to be able to pay his salary. He could make more money, but they'll still able to receive contracts. It's just the state's not going to have to pay him directly anymore. It's all going to go through, they get hired for Nail Communications to do something.
Well, that could certainly be. I love in that article that he's going to recuse from participating in anything having to do with the governor for 1 year. So he'll get to work with her again after a year for the next 3 years. The thing that I'm going to be watching is what role Nail Communications plays in any future activities of Raimondo's politically. This, they could see this and her as a, you know, an avenue toward national contracts, where she's moving into the Democratic National Governor's Committee,
right,
or becoming a cabinet member or vice president. That's now, you've got an inside line to some national money, which will be a lot bigger. So it'll be between that and watching what happens in the telecommunications contracts over the next 4 years, is going to be, or 2 years, is going to be a very interesting tidbit to mark down on your schedules.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. This is Political Monday. We're talking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, Providence Journal this morning, they have what I would consider, as much as the going to, a scathing editorial regarding binding arbitration, of which the unions right now, it is full steam ahead. They just rolled over all their opponents in the fall elections. They control the governor's seat. They control the House. They control the Senate. And they have the progressives on their side that many times have become their voices. It's amazing, some of these people that then just kind of, you can't beat them, join them, jump on in the bandwagon. But it is full speed ahead with now with teachers' collective bargaining. And what just strikes me is, and the Journal even mentions it, I mean, the unions basically have the politicians in their pocket, and they command them in so much. No city and town is in favor of this. This completely goes against any type of local governance. But what people need to understand is, as long as you're dealing with the unions, AFL-CIO, when is enough enough? It's never enough. They will go for every last dime. It doesn't matter. Raise taxes. In different communities, you have to raise taxes. It has no bearing on them of what the test scores are, what the condition should be. It's all about the contracts. It's all about the negotiation. It's all about, we want this and we want that, and that school district has this, so we want that. Binding arbitration, you know, you have Cranston, Maryland, Fung up there, the Leagues of Cities and Towns, but they're in for a fight because the unions will not go away. They want and are demanding binding arbitration.
Oh, yeah, and the presentation of this, George Nee from the AFL-CIO, he says this is just to level the playing field. What they never get around to talking about is proving that there's actually an imbalance in the playing field. Right now, there's the teachers make good money. They make more, a disproportionate amount of money, I would say, versus the private sector. They've got a great schedule, and they've got benefits that people in the private sector generally can only dream of. There's no evidence that right now the playing field is tilted in favor of taxpayers and elected officials. It's all tilted toward the teachers' unions, and they just want it even more. One thing I've noticed, binding arbitration has been on the table for a long time, so I've been writing about it and reading about it. But now that I'm actually on an elected board and participating in negotiations, there's one key thing that nobody's ever mentioned, and it's very important. When you're talking with fire and police, they've got, not only is it emergency situations and public safety, but you've also got 24-hour schedules, which are hard to manage, and that gives a good bit of leverage to management in negotiations, because that's a management right. When you go to arbitration, the arbitrators can't talk about how many you hire, what kind of shifts you have. They can't take that away from the town. Teachers don't have anything like that. It's hard to even understand what management rights would be, what would be off the table in an arbitration setting with a teachers union. And that's going to change the dynamic very much. And contrary to George Nee, it's going to tilt the playing field even more. And I think there's a reason that municipal folks, no matter where they are on the political spectrum, travel to the State House every year to say, don't do this to us, because it will be devastating.
It will be, but at the same time, there's nothing that shows me that that's not going to stop them. And even you have Anastasia Williams, you know, who's the chairperson of Labor, saying at the press conference, you know, the time has come and we need to adapt and the times are changing and we need to get to this. Again, I don't know who wrote out those talking points, but Rhode Island continues to truly be an island where the rest of the states, because of the ruling in the Supreme Court, have started to push back against the power of the public unions because of the progressives who have now aligned themselves with it. You have these unlikely allies, and their power just seems to be growing where the rest of the country is going backwards. Speaking of power, the Providence Journal did endorse Speaker Mattiello, and it was just last year where you have people, and I want to give him credit because it was Ken Block that really pushes and trying to push line item veto. What people need to understand is You want accountability. And people may say, well, I don't want Governor Raimondo to have that much power. But in Massachusetts, they have line item veto. All these other states have it, where the governor can draw a line through this ridiculous spending. If not, all this stuff is just crammed into the budget. And even though you and I don't want A, B, and C, we do want D, so we tolerate A, B, and C. And that's why there's all this bloating. There's no accountability. Mattiello has the power. He wants it that way. Put up that ridiculous study commission last year. And what is your view on how, to me, there's no way that Mattiello wants to continue, in any way, give up any shred of power. Line item veto would do that. But what is the next tactic? Do we have any reason to believe it would ever make it to the floor for a vote?
Yeah, I tend to doubt that. What's interesting here is you allude to it. I mean, this has been on the table for a long time, back to Governor Kercheri at least. And back then, it's intellectually and politically, it was aligned, because you would be giving basically the Republican governor some more leverage versus the Democrat General Assembly. And that seemed to be the long-running practice, was that it would be Democrat legislators and a Republican governor. And in that situation, having the line item veto is pretty clearly advantageous. Whereas under Raimondo, you know, the role has been that the General Assembly has actually cut back some of her budget requests. So it's hard to understand what she might line item veto, except maybe something like the car tax phase out. Where she doesn't have to compromise at the end of the day, she can just cross that out. Politically, it does make for an interesting problem right now, given that she's pretty progressive. And we're seeing the progressives now coming out in favor of line item veto, probably for that exact reason. But, you know, in the bigger picture, Rhode Island does have a weak executive office. And that will, if we give that a little more strength, that might change voting patterns, voting habits a little bit more. When people consider who they're going to vote for governor, they'll consider that level of power and that they need to return to having that be an offset to the General Assembly rather than pulling the General Assembly farther to the left. And, you know, we are one of, what, six states without line item veto, so we are an outlier there. I just kind of wish we could push it through right before an election so voters could decide on a governor with that information, rather than right after putting a pretty strong progressive in office and then giving her even more power.
Yeah, and again, I know that some people may feel, gee, why would we want to give the governor more power? But at least then you'd have some element of accountability. Right now, you and I and everyone, you can object with what Mattiello does, but we have no, I'd rather have a situation at least than you could vote in favor of the person you want having more power or hold them accountable for it. Right now, I think something fundamentally that's wrong is, and you would know, but there's just no accountability. Mattiello can do whatever he wants, and as long as he keeps just a certain number of Democrat lawmakers happy up there, and as long as the people in his district keep voting him back in, and we have no reason to believe they're not going to, that he has all this unaccountability of power. And then you really saw it, you know, after the fiasco with the Paw Sox, he should have been removed from office with the way that whole thing went down, just as far as the negotiation and how they were treated. But again, he has complete unchecked power, and he is up there for that reason. I just am wondering what his new excuse is going to be. There's no reason for it to be studied. There's no reason to set up a panel or commission. It's like now we just have to wait to see what type of excuse he's going to come up with. Speaking of excuses, Justin, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro on this Monday. It is Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Front page of this morning's Providence Journal. You know, I don't understand. Now, again, you're starting to hear some of the progressives that are leading it. We have to get rid of voter ID. It's disenfranchising people. People are not voting because of it. It's a hindrance. Rhode Island needs to get rid of voter ID. That is another one of those. They can say we studied it, and it just, but that is another one of those. It just never goes away. They don't accept that this was a move in the right direction. What are your thoughts on now? They're once again going to try to get rid of voter ID.
Well, the pretense this time is there was a Brown University study that supposedly found that voter ID reduced voting by low-income people, which is supposedly disenfranchising them. Although there are problems with the study, they didn't look at non-driver's license IDs. But what's really striking is they looked at pretty much a single year. They compared the 2012 election versus the 2016 election and looked at voter turnout. And voter turnout went up, but not as much as they said it should have. So it seems like a pretty contrived study, and they're just trying to find some way to say that it is morally wrong to require people to be able to prove they are who they say they are when they vote. And it's telling. If you look at the findings of that study, they actually found that the districts where the lawmaker, the legislator, opposed voter ID actually saw more of a decrease than where the lawmaker supported voter ID. And you could spin that one of two ways. You could say either the legislators know their constituents and who's going to be affected and they're trying to help them, or some of them know that they're relying in no small part on votes that probably shouldn't be cast or that are being cast in suspicious ways, and therefore they oppose voter ID. There's really ultimately no argument against requiring somebody to show an ID, especially when they make it so easy to get them, that minimal amount of participation is laughably small. And so it's all about increasing the number of people who can vote under questionable circumstances. And you're right, because there's a political incentive there, which ultimately means a financial incentive for, like, the unions we were just talking about, they'll keep coming back year after year after year, and until they either get rid of that or people start voting them out of office because they're so transparently looking for to corrupt our system.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Justin, what are you also, you know, I just spoke with Sue Cianchi at 12:30, and she would like to be the new head of the Republican Party. Now, 2020 is big. It's going to be tough because of the presidential election that brings up more people. But if you were to advise, you have several people that would like to replace Brandon Bell, who I think has done a good job as far as doing the PR element of it. But what you really need are to put some Republicans in a position who can win in certain districts for the state house, that there are some winnable districts. You need to get someone who legitimately can win and then work with them to get their message out. And there are certain areas, I think, around the state that if the progressive agenda was aggressively highlighted by a Republican running, such as some of the actions taken up at the state house, I think that there's such a discord right now within the state of how things are going that they could have some gains, but it's going to be tough during a presidential year. The time to make those gains is in the off years, which we just had, and there were no gains. And you just go right down the ballot as far as on the, just the statewide races, and with the exception of Mayor Fung, it was a complete trouncing, and even then, Governor Raimondo in some ways kind of ran up the numbers. But what would you think would be the successful platform, a way to approach the 2020 election?
Well, according to our national partners at the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, a lot of supporters that conservatives and Republicans need and have been having a hard time motivating, they're looking for people who are going to get in the fight and stand up on principle. And that's the number one thing they need. And that's going to motivate people locally to get involved. It's going to motivate people to run for office when they know they're not going to be, you know, trying to work with a wishy-washy GOP at the state level. I think that's very important. And one thing that Sue Cianchi does have behind her in recommending her in that regard is that she was on a pretty contentious East Greenwich Town Council, which took the fight to the unions, and they got trounced and routed out of office last November. But, you know, that's going to happen, and people can learn from those sorts of experiences. So I from what I've been able to see of the various candidates, I think Sue Cianchi could probably be a good choice in that she's not afraid to take some risks and to make mistakes and learn, and she's not afraid to stand up, and that can be motivating, especially when you've got people on our side of things in Rhode Island. There's almost at some point a sort of a Stockholm syndrome where you feel like you deserve to be where you are and to just be the minority. I mean, we were talking about the speaker's power with line item veto. If you want real accountability, what has to happen is differences of opinion, so that when a speaker does something outrageous, you don't have to vote him out of office because you've got the balance of power is close enough that it can shift and people can vote differently and pick a new speaker, for example. So I think that's the kind of, we need that kind of fight and confident, kind of clear conservatism in a Republican state chairperson. And so far that I've seen, Cianchi is the one who most credibly brings that to the table.
My view is, as far as who should be the head of the Rhode Island Republican Party, I compare it to kind of the basketball, where if you're the head of the Democrat Party, you can you could kind of be a pro coach. But if you're the head of the Republican Party, you have to be a college coach. And many times the separation is, if you're a pro coach, they give you the team, and then it's your best ability to try to manage them, even though many ways, like the NBA, it's a players' league, where people, like, you have superstars like LeBron and everything else, that you really can't coach them. You have to just try to guide them and work with some of the others. If you're the Republican, or if you're a college coach, the success, whether or not you're going to be successful, depends on, you have to be able to sit in someone's living room in some pocket of the state and convince a man or a woman with their spouse there, maybe some family and friends, that in order to jump off the diving board and get involved in the race. And these are people that have probably never run before, and you have to sit there and convince them that you're going to try to work with them, try to provide them some resources. They're going to keep saying they've never done anything like this before. They're going to have a lot of misconceptions about it. But there have been college coaches. I remember Al Skinner, who was then removed to Boston College as the head of their basketball program. One of the reasons was he didn't like go out recruiting. Whereas you have someone who's really successful. Most recently, you know, Hurley, that left URI now at UConn. Or you go back to like someone like a Patino or John Calipari. Are you willing to go, you know, to the Bronx, to the kids' living room, sit there with the family, and convince them that if they agree to go to your college, you know, you're going to make them a star, you're going to take care of them, need to, like, have them sign on the dotted line? The pro coaches don't have to recruit. The college coaches do. So to me, it's less about appearing on statewide television. It's less about, and I'm not saying that's not important, it's less about press releases, but it's going to different pockets of the state where you technically could have a Republican representative. And those are places traditionally maybe where Trump did well, or that it's not so progressive, some of the more rural areas, and make sure that you get someone, and then you're sitting there, and in that moment of truth, they trust you. You can push them over the finish line and get them to announce. If someone is unwilling to do that, or they're not good in that role, then it's just not going to happen. It's not about writing policy. It's not about traveling to Washington. It is not about going to conferences. It's not about appearing with Hummel on Lively Experiment. It's not about that. It's about sitting with some man or woman in a certain pocket of the state, one of the 39 cities and towns that maybe's even taken the first step, or they're on school committee or town council, but you need to say, we need you at the Rhode Island State House. If someone could do that and really put together a team of new people with winnable races, that's how you could start to turn the tide. Because, Justin, I feel the more that people hear about infanticide and illegal aliens, and they won't build the wall, and Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren, and, you know, Alexander AOC with her, you know, green, the new Green Deal, the more that you can highlight those and get independents or moderate Dems to say, are you really a member of a party that is in favor of open borders? Are you really a member of the Democrat Party that believes in infanticide, or is just choking the state and forcing people to move out of here and an exodus is on? You know, is that really the party you identify with? And by and large, I think you could start to pick off some people and get people that would feel more comfortable under the umbrella of the, they're not sure if they're a Republican, but they're definitely not a socialist. So I think she's an interesting candidate. I don't know how this is going to pan out, but it's, to me, it's all about being a recruiter.
Well, that raises, I wonder where we differ here, because I think we're very close on our opinions on this, although I can't compete on the college basketball talk, I'll admit right now. I think we definitely agree that the chairperson isn't about public appearances, and it's become that in some regards.
It has.
It's the person that the Providence Journal can call up for the Republican point of view.
Yep.
And that's probably not what the chairperson ought to be doing. But with regard to the I guess it's maybe a question of the method of recruiting. I'm not sure that it's it's even a good idea at this point in history for the state Republican chairperson to be going out and recruiting and saying, I will work with you and get you over the line, because it's proving to be a promise that the state party can't keep. And so what we see a lot, and we've been seeing for a number of election cycles now, is they do this recruiting thing. They get a whole bunch of people to run, sometimes more, sometimes less. And then most of them lose, and lose badly. They get in that 32 to 38% of the vote that just about anybody will get. 38 is when you do real good work. 32 is when you don't do anything at all. But you're going to hit that.
You're talking about some of the statewide offices, though. I'm talking about for running as rep or senator. A lot of those races tend to be closer and more winnable because it's just less votes. I'm not talking about, you know, what we saw last time around with this in November with Secretary of State, with Lieutenant Governor, with General Treasurer. That, no question about it. But as far as there has to be more of an infrastructure to help a rep in Middletown, into wherever, around the state, North Kingstown, there's got to be more of an infrastructure to try to help those people. You can't just... boom, good luck to you, and, you know, Godspeed. It can't be that. It has to be more of an infrastructure to help them get, you know, learn and know what they have to do in order to be successful.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess I'm cynical about the degree to which the state party actually has or even has the capacity to build that infrastructure right now, which is why I think... I would tend to emphasize, I mean, to me, you hit on it toward the end of your comments a moment ago when you started talking about actual issues. And that's why I think the chairperson kind of needs to be not necessarily out there visibly in the news being, you know, the Republican voice, but somebody who can credibly say, yes, I'm pro-life, I'm for secure borders, et cetera, if you care about these issues and the broader, you know, taxation, limiting the power of unions and all that, if you care about that enough to think about running, I'm on your side, and you're not going to be fighting me on those issues. I'm not going to be downplaying those issues in our campaign. I think that's key. I'm always worried about overselling, and so if a state chairperson sits in somebody's room and says, I need you to run for state rep, or and I'll help you get over the line, or I need you to run for school committee or town council, I don't know that I've seen the Republican Party able to mount anything. I mean, independent candidates have been able to do it. People with money have been able to do it, but it always comes from the candidate, him or herself, and I think that's where the focus should be on motivating people more. When they're on the line because they're motivated themselves, helping them to be a little bit more motivated is probably more important than trying to give them some kind of assurance that the state party has their back, because I'm not sure that's possible for the state party to promise at this point.
Folks, he's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Great to talk to you.
All right, folks, it's John DePietro on this Monday. Again, from now, it's 1:40. We'll open up the phone lines. Take your phone call, 766-1380, 401-766-1380. Anything, any topic you want to mention or talk about, open line from now until 2 o'clock, 401-766-1380. You can email me. It's john@depietro.com. john@depietro.com. Winter weather advisory in effect. It just sounds like it's going to be a little messy tomorrow. It does not sound like it's going to be anything too dramatic. Boy, so far, the winter has been just incredible, hasn't it? It's a little odd yesterday. Wasn't it odd not having any football? But the new AAF, the American Alliance Football League, kicked off Saturday night, had almost 3 million viewers on CBS. Now, those are not huge numbers, but they had games yesterday, and the game on Saturday night received more viewers than the NBA on ABC. So more people watching a brand new startup football league than deciding to watch pro basketball. I was reading about it yesterday. The person that started is Dick Ebersol's son. No, wait a minute. Is it Dick Ebersol's son? I'm blanking out. I believe so. Ebersol's son. And he was also the same individual that did the 30 for 30. He was part of that documentary on the old XFL, which actually, when they first started, they had big numbers. They had really big numbers there. And then it fell off, obviously, from there. But for a while, the XFL was taking all the Heisman Trophy winners and paying them to play there. I think Doug Flutie then went there, and Trump owned a team.
the New Jersey Giants. And but this is different. And football is far more popular now than it was during the 80s when the XFL started. It's not even, it's night and day. And the more that this becomes popular, this really now could start to hurt basketball and hockey and baseball as people then feel, all right, football's over. Now we can focus and watch those sports and not so fast. Think of that. Saturday night, people had a chance. You could either watch the NBA or you could watch a brand new startup football league. And that pulled bigger numbers first time out than the than people watching NBA basketball. It's John DePietro on this Monday, 401-766-1380. Remember, Mega Disposal. Call them today, 866-420-MEGA, 866-420-6342. Mega Disposal, local family-owned and operated trash recycling collection company. They have been serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts for almost two decades. If you own a small business, call Mega for all your trash and recycling collection services. They have various sizes for estate cleanouts, major construction jobs, entire households, even a swing door. Provide easy loading of materials. Mega, MEGA, they have smaller containers for local businesses or shops that can be emptied on a weekly, every other week, or monthly basis. If you own a small business, call Mega for your trash and recycling collection services. 866-420-MEGA, MEGA. 866-420-6342. Now, maybe you'd like to clean out your basement or your garage or your attic or just get rid of some junk. Maybe you're moving. Throw the junk out now. Don't just move it to your new home. Call Mega. They could deliver a dumpster to your home. You fill up the dumpster and then they'll take it away when you're done. 866-420-MEGA. 866-420-6342. Mega Disposal. Local family owned and operated trash recycling collection company. They have been serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts for almost two decades. Call Mega Disposal today. Well, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380. 766-1380. You can email me, john@depietro.com. john@depietro.com. And then follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. I mentioned it earlier. Talk about political correctness within the media. The Providence Journal had the story. So the Providence police put out a police report that on Thursday night, two students, women from Roger Williams University, went downtown Providence and they went to a place on Pine Street called Haley's Ale House. At 11:30 at night, inside, they're there, and this guy goes up and asks one of them to dance. She starts to dance with him. He starts wildly groping her inappropriately on the dance floor. So she makes a big scene. The bouncers grab the guy. They throw him out of the bar. But if you've ever been there, sometimes the windows are open and people sit by the open windows because there's cigar smoke. And I don't remember Thursday night. It might have been mild. But as the guy's walking by and the window's open, large open window, the friend who learned what happened yells at him. This degenerate then reaches in and punches her in the face and knocks her out cold. So the Providence Journal writes, the man, now they're trying to find this person, all right? He flees. So the Providence Journal is putting his description to help and aid police to locate him. He's a person of color. But in the Providence Journal, they write, the man was described 6'3" tall, 220 pounds, muscular with short dark hair. They won't put his race. How does that help you find anybody? See, that is like political correctness. What would be so bad? See, they don't want to be described. Well, that's a racist. Who would put that? Would it be racist to say the man was African-American, 6'3", 220, muscular with short, dark hair? Would it be racist if he was to say the man was described as Latino, 6'3", 220, muscular with short, dark hair? Dark skin, 6'3", Indian descent, I don't know, Asian man, 6'3", 220. If they put the man was described as Caucasian, 6'3", I wouldn't be offended by that. The guy's a dirtbag. First he groped one of the girls, then he punched the other one in the face and knocked her out. So he is a total dirtbag. But the media has become that they're afraid to offend the person that they're trying to find. That's how backwards everything has become. Political correctness is even destroying law enforcement. That criminal, you're helping him. by not describing exactly what it looks for. And like I said earlier, if three guys go into a bank and then they jump into a car and get out of there. Now, don't you think it'd be more helpful to say three Mexican men jumped into a blue BMW, seemed to be a new blue BMW, and sped down Main Street. Don't you think it'd be easier if someone said, hey, I saw those guys, or hey, I know who that is, or you're driving along and you hear the bulletin of who to be on the lookout for. When you see those amber alerts, are the amber alerts, are those racist, or the silver alerts? What's the amber alert? The amber alert is a missing child. They give a full description and picture. What about a silver alert? Right? More details. And many times people say, hey, I saw exactly who that is. And they locate them. If we're going to fall into this political correctness, an old woman is missing. Right? An old woman from Cumberland. Silver alert. An old woman from Lincoln is missing. Call the police. How about what does she look like? How old? How tall? What's her weight? What's her name? Something like that. So how about that? A 10-year-old child is missing. Call the police if you see them. Amber, imagine that as an Amber Alert. 10-year-old child in Smithfield is missing. Call the police. Now, here's the picture. Here's the name. Skin, height. The child is white. The child is black. The child is Latino. The child is Indian. The child is whatever, Vietnamese. I don't care. But it's description. Three Mexican men robbed a bank. They jumped in a new blue BMW. If you see them, call the police. If you saw anything, call the police. Three men jumped in a car and sped off after robbing the bank. Wait, who's given the description here? Helen Keller? What is this? Providence Journal, a man. The police are looking for a man that did this. Oh, okay. How do you know it's a man? Maybe that individual identifies as a woman. Should we say a person groped and did that? Dare you say that? You don't want to offend his feelings. American actor Rob Lowe was forced to delete his tweet about Senator Elizabeth Warren. After Warren announced her intention to run for the presidency on Saturday, Lowe, tongue-in-cheek joke, tweeted her candidacy would, quote, give a whole new meaning to commander-in-chief. That's a good line. He was bashed on Twitter. You racist, how dare you say that? He had to delete it. On Sunday morning, he talked about the country's polarization. What he thinks causes it. He took observation. Many polarizing politicians actually like each other, privately help each other, then publicly stir the pot playing for votes. That's fine. Only thing wrong with it is that when we buy whole cloth, breeding intolerance, anger, and total inability to laugh at anything. Some critics on social media pointed out Lowe did not apologize on Saturday. On Saturday, some resurrected his 30-year-old sex tape scandal that nearly ended his... Remember that? He was at the 88 convention in Atlanta. Rob Lowe, best known for Sam Seaborn in The West Wing and Charlie Traeger in Parks and Recreation, wasn't the only celebrity to mock Warren after she announced. Today, Elizabeth Warren, sometimes referred to me as Pocahontas, joined the race for president, President Trump tweeted. I love this part. Why isn't she running as the first Native American presidential candidate? That would make history. He's exactly right. Or has she decided after 32 years this is not playing so well? And then the president puts, see you on the campaign trail, all capitals, Liz. Many saw the president's tweet, which earned an exclamation point, heavy kudos from his eldest son, as mockery of the Trail of Tears, the forced removal of Native Americans from their homeland under President Andrew Jackson. Warren has struggled to quell a controversy over her claims of Native American identity. Earlier this month, she apologized privately to the Cherokee Nation over DNA test results, indicating she has Native American ancestry. The test angered Native American leaders, who said tribal leadership is deeply rooted in culture, heritage, and laws, not just blood. You know, her speech, again, she did get a big crowd. That's fine. That's the big thing now. You get a huge crowd when you're out there. Kamala Harris had a big crowd, so now they're all trying to have big crowds. What was funny was the senator who has no shot in Minneapolis, as she announced and was talking about climate change, it was snowing unbelievably hard to the point she was then covered in snow. I can't believe why. How do you not have that inside? They wanted to be outside. It was freezing. The people at the announcement in Minneapolis looked like they were freezing with snow coming down, heavy snow. And she's up there talking about climate change. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380. 766-1380. Third person charged now in theft of Boston cop's gun. Hey, also, what do you think of the fact, I don't believe those women that stole, allegedly, the Boston cop's gun. They told police he paid them $2,500 for sex. You can weigh in. I posted that on the Facebook page. $2,500. Now, I think there could be an extra zero thrown in on the whole. Take a look. But a third person has now been charged. Third person accused of stealing the gun from the Boston cop. While he was at a hotel with two... Now the journal's calling them prostitutes last weekend. I thought they were strippers. We're changing the name. Kyle Benford, 24, Providence, arrested Saturday, charged with stealing the service weapon from Boston police officer Emmanuel Brando's car. Brando's charged with conspiring with the two women in the theft. Bedford, excuse me, is charged with that. A Brando's gun. Melissa Dacier, 22, of Providence. Nisha Rivera, 25, Pawtucket. So the officer paid them $2,500 for the two of them. Are you sure there's not an extra zero in there? Were arrested hours after they and the gun disappeared February 2nd. The 40 caliber Glock 22 was found that afternoon, wrapped in a Walmart bag, stuffed in a mail slot at the Hartford Avenue Fire Station in Providence. Well, they picked up this third person, Kyle Bedford, 24, at the Harvard Avenue housing project. The cop is on leave. Boston police have not identified him, although he's named in police and court records. The theft of the weapon may have stemmed from an argument between the women and Bedford at the Hamptons Inn in Pawtucket. After a night of drinking at a hookah bar and visiting the Cadillac Lounge, Brando and the two women went to the hotel. Pawtucket police say Benford was in the elevator with them, got into an argument. Brando told the police he broke up the argument. One of the women said he announced, "Listen, I'm a cop and I have a gun in my car." He did until he didn't. Brando told the police he had it locked the gun in the glove compartment of his BMW, securing it with a cable lock. When he and the other women and the women went to the Cadillac Lounge, Brando left the keys to the cable lock in the cup holder. At the hotel, he gave his car keys to Dancy to retrieve his phone charger. Boy, phone chargers cause so much problems, don't they, folks? So he used a phone app to pay them for sex. There's a phone app so he could pay them for sex, apparently. The police believe Benford went to the car when Dacia did and stole the gun. Police didn't say what the relationship Benford may have had with the women. Pimp. Benford has a criminal record, multiple charges of driving without a license. Or drugs. Police detectives investigated the case, drew the warrant for Benford at the Hartford. He was, Providence police arrested him on a warrant Saturday night as he left Hartford Park Housing Project, where he lives. Faced a bail commissioner on Sunday. So, boy, the stories just continue over that whole situation with the Boston cop. You know, that made national news, actually. I did see it. If you Googled that, it actually made the national wires. USA Today carried it, ABC News carried it, simply because it was a Boston cop that had his gun stolen by the two entertainers, if you will, or two girls. One of them definitely a stripper. I don't know if both of them were. Now the journal's referring to them as prostitutes, which we don't have all the details on that. All right, 766-1380, 766-1380. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. This portion of the program brought to you by Kay's, 1013 Cass Avenue, Woonsocket. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge, they're waiting for you. Stop in and see them at Kay's. 766-1380, 766-1380. Now, this is a big week because the government shutdown is once again threatening. Now, there is talk that they're going to resolve it. And I believe I saw over the weekend that there is a provision that it could be resolved, and it could be resolved with enough money for at least some element to start the wall. So, but the countdown is on. I don't know if there's been a clock set up yet or anything on CNN, but there's definitely this will be a big week. Hopefully they'll resolve this and we won't have another government shutdown. Folks, 766-1380. Speaking of guns, remember our friends at Competition Shooting Supplies, John Francis. Now, they're closed today. They're open tomorrow. 435 Benefit Street in Pawtucket. You can call them at 727-1716, 401-727-1716. For Competition Shooting Supplies, proud factory authorized dealer of Dillon Precision, Beta C Mag, and Glock. They stock an assortment of durable products from trusted brands, 100-round capacity drum magazines, pistols, state-compliant pistols and rifles. They stock Smith & Wesson, Ruger, HK, Sig Sauer, Springfield Armory, and more. With Competition Shooting Supplies, they buy, sell, and trade guns from trusted names, carry gun sight scopes and mounts. A selection of new and used firearms include shotguns, pistols, and rifles. They're open tomorrow. Stop in and see John Francis, the owner, at Competition Shooting Supplies. 435 Benefit Street in Pawtucket. Take the last exit off of 95. Go past the Attleboro train station, and then you'll arrive right there at Benefit Street in Pawtucket and call them at 727-1716. Competition Shooting Supplies. Remember our slogan, with the caravan on their way, stop at Competition Shooting Supplies today, 727-1716. Well, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Now, there is going to be a little bit of some snow and ice a little bit moving in. It sounds like it's just going to maybe affect a little bit later and then the morning commute, but the forecast coming up. Hey, just again, another reminder, you want to protect your vehicle during this winter weather. Remember and stop and see them. A tremendous detail. That's right. Tremendous detail equals tremendous results. Tremendous detail. 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. You can call them at 508-479-5400. Online, tremendousdetail.com. Incredible premier detailing center. It's going to make an tremendous difference on your vehicle at tremendous detail. Certified detailing specialists, certified ceramic coating specialists, friendly educated staff, and wait till you see their newly renovated facility. Tremendous detail. Take your vehicle there. You want to find out about the ultimate protection. The jade quartz ceramic coating makes a huge difference for your car at Tremendous Detail, 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Call them at 508-479-5400 and online at tremendousdetail.com.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know with his talk show.
That's right.
On your radio.
On the radio.
He's John DePietro.
That's me.
Tune in your radio.
Yes, that'd
go
be nice.
Get him, Johnny D.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Listen, folks, enjoy this Monday. Careful later. Little bit of inclement weather. But either way, we will be back tomorrow at 11. Remember, follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. The Dion Experience is next on AM 1380 and 99.9 FM.
WNRI and W236CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.